You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault on this glorious Tuesday. At least that's the day we're recording. We are bringing this Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, to you from the standpoint of being possibly mere hours away from the Royals being first place for the at the furthest point in the season. This is Tuesday night, June 17th, that we're recording this. And if they win, and at this point that we're recording, the Royals are up 7-0 in the second inning. And if they win, then this will be the furthest end of the season that they've been in first place since 2003. So, fantastic news. And that's going to segue right into our first segment here, where we just talk about these Royals, Mike. They're just, a couple weeks ago, okay, we'll just rehash this little bit here. We've talked about the Royal Coaster just years ad nauseum on this show. And, a couple weeks ago, we were dejected. We were despondent. We were talking about fire sales. We were talking about, firing the front office. We were talking about firing Ned Yost. Were people going to pick up Billy Butler's option? What was going on with these Royals? It was bad news bears, and didn't look like it was going anywhere. The Tigers were just running away with it. And then it's back to life. The Royals here, the Tigers just going to their 27-12. And they're now currently, 36-30? So
something like that.
Because I think they were 36-29. Yeah, because the Royals were 36-32 before they beat them last night. So they were, that's a 13-18 stretch. And there was a lot of, 9-18 stretch. I don't know what I was thinking, 13. I'm an accountant, remind you, remember. a 9-18 stretch right there for the Tigers that just allowed everybody back in this, everybody in the division. And the Royals have taken the most advantage of it, winning 8 straight going into Tuesday night's game here. And as I said, they're winning 7-0 in the second inning against the 2013 Cy Young winner. So, besides after the All-Star break last year, and as we all know from last year, that didn't really amount to anything, because as good as that stretch was and as fun as it was, all it really did was just keep them around and keep them in the conversation, because everybody else pretty much did the same thing from the division and didn't allow the Royals to make up much ground. But this is completely different because, as our friend David Leskey pointed out yesterday, the Royals going into this Tigers series, this is the first time that this late in the season that the Royals have gone into a series and been able to come out of it. I can't remember how did he phrase it? I can't.
It's basically that they come into the series with the opportunity to leave it in first place by playing the team in first place.
Yeah, because they
is about how he phrased it.
Yeah, they've been first place before this late in the season, as I said, 2003, but never have they not been in first place and had the opportunity to take that over this late in the season against the first place team, as you said. So, that in and of itself is pretty awesome. And then now here they are. They were a game and a half back as of yesterday. Again, this is June 17th, Tuesday, that we're recording this. So the Monday night game on June 16th, the Royals come in against Justin Verlander, former league MVP, multiple Cy Young winner. He's not what he has been. And now, don't want to take much away from the Royals because they've been playing great, but Justin Verlander is on the struggle bus big time this year. But regardless, you still, I mean, in years past, the Royals have gone against players that are on the, that are struggling, and let them get back in their groove. Well, the Royals went up against a pitcher who was struggling, and they kept him struggling. And they dropped 7 runs on Verlander, just like they have on Scherzer already. And they ended up winning 11-8. Now, the final score was not nearly indicative of how much the Royals dominated. They were up 11-2 when Vargas left the game. And then 2 more runs were given up. I can't remember who gave up the first 2. And then Donnie Joseph comes in and loads the bases and gives up a grand slam. So then all of a sudden it's 11-8, and then they end up closing it out. But and they win the game. I mean, this is unprecedented, literally. I mean, what a
this is it's weird.
What are you thinking right now, Mike?
Well, I remember a couple weeks ago there was that sweep by the Astros that, you know, that looked like rock bottom, just absolute rock bottom. But I guess once you hit rock bottom, you only have one more direction to go, and that's up. And that's what they've been doing. And there's been some chaos. They changed hitting coaches, and maybe Dale Swaim is a genius and got them right, because they're hitting for power now. They're driving in runs. They're also doing the thing where they'll get a bunch of hits in a row, but
they're not just singles, you know, they're getting doubles.
Yeah, they're getting a lot of doubles. I think they're the only team that has 3 players with 20 doubles right now. And maybe that's wrong. I don't know. I'd have to double check it, but I think I saw that from like a tweet from the official Royals account or something. But, you know, you've got some guys hitting home runs, and tonight Alex Gordon hit a home run. Mike Moustakas hit a home run the other day. Sal Perez ripped the crap out of a home run. I mean, they're hitting for a lot more power. They are getting production from everybody in the lineup. And you can see, based on, you know, what the Royals have pitching and defensively, you know, if they get any kind of run support, they look pretty dangerous. And when they get really good run support, they go on, you know, 8-game winning streaks that, you know, look like they could be 9-game winning streaks. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's so weird, because 2 weeks ago things were looking so bad, and, you know, didn't really know what was going on, and Ventura was hurt and pitching tonight, pitching okay, but I don't know. I mean, you look at the playoff odds, and they're kind of improving towards the Royals' favor. Still, you know, I don't think everybody's really convinced. I think the projections were very strongly for Detroit to start out, and you really have to kind of, you know, really overtake them. But the Royals have the opportunity to do that right now while they're in Detroit, and you know, so far they're taking care of business. I mean, like you said, they took care of Verlander last night, and they just battered around on Scherzer and worked about 40 pitches out of him in an inning. And, you know, they look like they're in good shape for this game too. So it's crazy. I don't know what to do as a fan watching this team, because it's really easy to kind of get caught up in it. While there are also things that, okay, I mean, they're doing really well right now, but how much is just like a correction from how bad they were offensively in May, and then what happens when it levels out? Because, I mean, there's going to be a point where they lose some games. I mean, they're not going to win every game here on out, as awesome as that would be, but, you know, I think you just kind of have to enjoy it. I mean, I like to analyze the game and think about different things, but there's not much going wrong right now. So, you know, why look for things that are going wrong, and just kind of see what develops, and kind of keep all the other big picture things in mind. But for this stretch, yeah, just enjoy it. Enjoy the ride for the moment.
We're both watching the game here, so if we get distracted for a moment,
yeah,
that's why. And I just saw Mike's a little bit ahead of me, because I'm watching on my iPad, so there's about a 15-second delay between what Mike sees and what I see. And I just saw Escobar boot a perfectly playable ground ball that could have been a double play into, or I guess, no, there wasn't anybody on first, whether it was just second and third. So
yeah,
it could have been an out, though. And nope, instead it ends up being a run. So It's now 7-1 Royals. But anyway, I mean, to your point, like, I mean, I'm with you. It's just kind of one of those things where you, I mean, we analyze and we talk about the Royals, and do we overanalyze? Yeah, probably. You know, I mean, that's kind of what the whole point of blogging and podcasting about one singular topic is. But at the same time, I mean, there's a lot to look at. And, but at this point, I mean, I don't really know if there's much. I mean, there's not really much to analyze at this point. I mean, there's a lot, but
yeah,
what
I mean,
I'm saying is you just kind of got to throw your hands up and enjoy the ride. I mean, people get on us a lot on Twitter, the quote unquote Royals blogosphere, about being too negative and just enjoying it and all that, or not just enjoying it and all that kind of stuff. Well, I mean, that's where I'm at right now, because regardless of how negative any of us have been in the past, we're all still fans. We want this team to succeed, and that's what they're doing right now. So, I mean, this is fantastic. It's great to see, and just enjoying it. I mean, this is, I don't know if I've, I mean, I literally have not seen this in my lifetime, meaning like this particular moment where the Royals could enter a series not in first place and come out of it first place, you know, by beating the first place team, whatever, however, you know, it's been since 85. So I haven't seen that in my life. So, I mean, this is pretty cool to see this, and hopefully they can pull it off and make this happen and then just keep things rolling.
Yeah. And run away.
God, run away and hide with this thing. I mean, this is it, you know, this is your chance. This is as good a chance. With the way the Tigers have been playing, this is as good a chance as any Royals team has had. Regardless of how much talent is on that Royals team, this seems to be about as good a chance as they've had of making a run at the division.
Yeah, and I mean, like last year, they got James Shields, and you know, they looked pretty good. You know, once they got into June, July, and August, but you know, they never really had much of a chance of catching Detroit. Every single part was, you know, how do you get to the wild card? You know, just get to the wild card and then go from there. And now, you know, if they're in it right now, you know, they have a shot. I mean, they would have a shot even, let's say they don't come out of this series and are still in first place. I mean, worst case, they're going to be still within a few games. And, you know, with the way Verlander's throwing and with kind of the back end of the Tigers rotation and with their bullpen, that presents an opportunity for the Royals to stay pretty close to them, because the Tigers aren't going to be able to run away. Now, the caveat to that is that the Royals have to continue to hit and show that what they've done over the last 8-9 games isn't just, you know, very short term. Now, I don't think they're scoring like 7 runs a game, so they're not going to do that. But if they can score 4, you know, just a shade over 4, that's pretty good, because they're going to be able to do a lot with, you know, like I said, the pitching and defense and the bullpen. You know, their run prevention is very good. And if they can just score some runs at even close to a league average rate, they're going to be in good shape. And, you know, you see what happens when they kind of explode and everybody's hitting at the same time. Well, you know, you look back to May and basically nobody was hitting. You know, the only people who were hitting anything was Alex Gordon kind of woke up, and Escobar and Kane were kind of doing stuff, but you weren't getting anything from a power standpoint. Now everybody's kind of hitting a little bit. Butler's hitting a lot of doubles. Hosmer's hit some homers. Moustakas has come back and he's hit some homers. Gordon is looking like a legit top 5 MVP candidate right now. I mean, he's just been locked in.
Yeah, it's been special to watch Alex Gordon this past month.
Oh God, he's been so good. Defensively, at the plate, all around, it's pretty awesome. So, yeah, you know, you could pick out things to complain about. I mean, the bullpen is kind of thin when you think about it. Collins and Coleman and others haven't really been that great, and you know, you could say that Vargas may not be able to sustain what he's doing right now, or Guthrie, or, you know, even Duffy or Ventura, but they're doing it right now. And that's all that you really got to think about is, you know, what they're doing right now. So, you know, I think if you're looking for those kind of things, you can probably find them. But
yeah,
as a fan, I don't want that. You know, as someone who I don't even know what my real title, you know, analyst, podcast or whatever, you know, I wouldn't say that I don't know. I think it's disingenuous just to look for the bad stuff for the sake of finding the bad stuff. But I think there is something to be said for watching it with an eye towards what the big picture is as well. But the difference is, you know, don't let that overshadow the fandom. And I think a lot of times the people who throw out, you know, people who call, you know, guys like us haters for showing any kind of criticism, don't really keep that in mind. I think they're probably too far on the other side of that, where any kind of fact that might not be the best fact for your team is perceived as, you know, hating on someone or, you know, wanting them to fail or anything like that. So it's a weird balance.
And you know, when we had the radio show on 1510 and we talked about the Nationals were going to sit Steven Strasburg when they were the best team by far in baseball and they were heading to the playoffs and they needed Strasburg, but they sat him down and they ended up losing in the playoffs, didn't make the World Series. And I don't know if he would have made a difference. You know, I don't know. But what I do know is that my philosophy, just from a fan, is I will trade the championship for a lot. I mean, I don't know if I'd trade the 85 World Series for 29 subsequent years of futility. But I mean, when you think about it though, like there's a lot that you would trade for, you know, to get that championship. And So like Mike was saying, we always try and have an eye towards the long-term health of the organization because we're such big fans. We want to win so much. We want the Royals to win so much. We want them to have sustained success so that we can have this feeling that we're having right now and this positivity from this podcast can last not just this season or not only a half season, you know, but years and years. That's what we want. But, you know, and so that's why there's often a lot of criticism, even when things are going somewhat well. But at the same time, when things are going this well, then it starts to be, and I think we've all kind of taken the approach of, you know, F it. Let's just we're enjoy the ride and let's go for it. Let's make this, do whatever we can. If the Royals need to make some prospect trades, I mean, it'd probably be a lot to get anybody that's truly going to make a difference. But if that's what they end up doing, I mean, this might be the one year that Dayton Moore gets a free pass, and I really wouldn't care because if they can get after this thing and make some noise, then they should go do it.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot out there, but at the same time, you know, that could change in just 2 weeks. I mean, maybe some team completely falls apart and realizes they have to start selling off pieces. You know, it can change, but you know, I think it was last week that we talked. We said something like, "I want to believe," and I do. I mean, I want to be psyched up. Last summer was really fun from a fan perspective where, you know, you're going out there and the Royals are winning 16 out of 20 and you get to watch the scoreboard every night and it's the middle of August. I mean, that is awesome. That is a fun time to get the opportunity to do. And I don't remember having that chance since 2003 where, you know, there was probably the most intense game I've been to was in 2003. It was August. And the Royals, you know, that was their kind of miracle fluke year. But they were against the Yankees, and both teams combined for like 15 doubles. It was like major league record for most doubles in a game by two teams. And they kept trading the lead back and forth, full stadium. You know, the Yankees fans get obnoxious because they take the lead, but then the Royals take it right back. And it's like everybody is on their feet through the whole game. And it's just, I want that again. I want to see that again, and I want to see it next year, and I want to, you know, I want to get to a point where it's not a national punchline or where people stop, you know, paying attention once training camp starts. And if the Royals keep doing this, that's definitely going to be a possibility, and I'll be really happy, even if I do think that Dayton Moore makes weird major league acquisitions, and even if I think that Ned Yost is too tied to falsely old school principles. You know, I can still have those critiques and still enjoy what they're doing. I don't know. I mean, maybe that validates them, maybe not. You could still also say it's year 8 and it took them this long to get to this point where you can almost see like a realistic shot at the division. But still, it's a shot at the division. You know,
yeah.
They can smell it. And granted, it's mid-June. So, I mean, this could all be shot in 2 weeks, too. The offense could tank out and we're back to where we were after the Astros game. But still, we're not there now. So I'm not going to hope for that.
Yeah, and point being, we're not too forward-looking to lose sight of the here and now and what's happening. And this is some awesome stuff that's going on with the Royals on this 8-game, possibly 9-game winning streak if they can keep this going, and possibly first place into here. So with that, I think we're going to take our first break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about really how hot the Royals have been and how sustainable is it, and it might be a little bit more positive than that lead-in would have you believe. So stick with us, come back on the other side, and we'll dive into some things, see how sustainable this Royals run really is.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends, the best pizza in Kansas City, and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for sticking with us. We're going to talk a little bit about the sustainability of how hot this Royals team has been and how this kind of projects going into the rest of the season. And Mike was kind of looking up a lot of things and brought up some really interesting information and used some cool tools that he's going to explain to you on how he came up with this information. Mike, why don't you tell everyone what you found?
Well, I was looking at baseballreference.com, and like the idea, I mean, the Royals are playing well and they're getting a lot out of their starting pitching. And I was just kind of looking at some of the numbers. And in the American League, the Royals starters are pitching. They've thrown the third most innings as a starting rotation this year. And if you look at it as a per start basis, they're right there. You know, you've got Seattle at 70 starts and 425.2 innings pitched coming into the game or into tonight. Then it's the Angels at 425 innings over 69 starts. And the Royals are right there. They're one out fewer than the Angels. 69 starts, 424.2 innings pitched coming into tonight. So really, you know, the Angels and Royals right there at the top of the American League as far as innings per start from their starting pitchers. And that's what's really doing a lot of good for this team, because you get, you know, not only are they eating up innings, they're your best pitchers, but, you know, they're pitching well enough to go deep into these games. And that's really helping with the run prevention and gives them an opportunity to win some of those games 3-2. And then when you get to a game like this, where you're up, you know, 7-0, now it's 7-2, you know, you get the opportunity to have a guy and really be like, okay, Yordano Ventura can probably go 6-7 innings with very little problem because it's what he's done. And so, you know, this is kind of a nice way to kind of look at how that splits up. And this is all just from Baseball Reference. You know, if you listen to this podcast, I mean, we've referenced baseballreference.com all the time. And for just about any baseball fan, it should be a daily visit when you're on the internet. It shows up-to-date, interconnected team and baseball stats, shows league leaders and game previews. It's great. It's a really cool little feature. But if you want to dig deeper and research so much of the baseball statistics that are on the site, the best way to do that is subscribing to the Baseball Reference Play Index. It allows you to do all kinds of things. A lot of the information that we played with, talking about Kauffman Stadium and home runs, I was just there in the Play Index and just looking at different splits, different years. You can search by year. You can find out who has the most 3-hit games in a row. You can look at different streaks. You can find player and pitcher splits and matchups. So if you haven't already subscribed to the Baseball Reference Play Index, this is a great time to do it, because if you go to baseballreference.com, you can click on Play Index in the upper right, and you can help support this podcast and the other podcasts on the Royals Podcast Network by getting it. You get a $6 discount just for listening. You just type in Royals into the form when you go to subscribe, and you get the Play Index for the whole year for just $30. I mean, you're talking, what is that, $3 a month? Less than $3 a month? I mean, that's
$2.50 a month, $2.50.
You know, you go to the game, you're paying $11 for parking. You're going to pay $7.50 for a hot dog. You know, if you can do $3 a month and you have a wealth of information at your fingertips at baseballreference.com through their Play Index, you know, it'll enrich your life. It'll support this podcast. And we're doing this just to break even. Baseballreference.com was kind enough to give us an opportunity to pass this on to you guys, as well as kind of help pay some of our bills to keep this going on. So check out the Play Index on baseballreference.com. You can play around with everything. And, you know, just like I was doing today, I was looking at pitching stats and a little bit of, you know, kind of what the starters have been doing. It's the same kind of stuff you can do at home.
Yep. We're really happy to have Baseball Reference on board here with the whole network, not just our podcast. And we're, if you listen to this show, you know that we go to Baseball Reference all the time. We use them all the time. We use the Play Index. If you want to find stats just like we do and you want to dig deeper into this stuff, this is a great time to learn. This is a great time to figure it all out. You need any help with stuff, talk to Mike or myself on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I'll help you through it, whatever, just anything. It's a great deal, and it's a great tool for anybody who's really interested in diving into some baseball stats.
And, you know, on that note, you know, this is something we kind of floated between Jeff and myself was, you know, I have some copies of the Willie Mays Aikens book, Safe at Home, that the publisher gave me for promotional purposes. So I want to give those out. So if you're listening to this, send us an email at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And come up with some, you know, find some interesting numbers, find some interesting stats. It could be historical. It could be current. It could be where the Royals are in relation to other teams right now. Just send us an email with what you find. You know, hopefully you'll use the Play Index. And again, you can just use Royals in the form and get $6 off of the subscription price. But send that along to us. If you don't use the Play Index, that's fine. Just hop on baseballreference.com and check them out and see what you can find from you know, what information they have there. And send that information to us. In about a month, we'll probably go through and pick some, and we'll give away some books. And
did that kind of sum up all your pitching stuff as well? Or
yeah, I mean, if you look at it just even deeper, though, the Royals have been really good with their health, because – they started the year, they had an idea of who their five guys were, and basically at this point, they have all five of those except for Bruce Chen, and they've replaced Bruce Chen with Danny Duffy, but the other four are the same guys they started with, so only seven guys on the Royals have started games this year, and really, they've only had to skip and replace a starter one time, and that was when Ventura was recovering from his elbow problem. Aaron Brooks, you know, didn't have a good game, but that's the only time they've had to do anything with a pitcher that they didn't decide we want them to be one of our top five pitchers right now. And I guess you could count Chen, but, you know, I think Duffy was the right call anyway. So incredibly healthy. And the result is you get to be, you know, one of the top pitching staffs in the American League. And you get good health, you get good pitchers pitching deep into games, and you get consistency. And so the Royals are getting that out of those guys, and then that allows the bullpen to settle into their roles because you don't have to shuffle around. You don't have to call up guys who might not be ready to be a starter full-time at the big league level. Like, you know, Aaron Brooks looked a little rough. You're not sure on Chris Dwyer. They're probably not ready to jump on John Lamb. So you get to keep those guys developing in the minors. And so, you know, as the season progresses, as long as these guys stay healthy and stay productive, that is so much into the Royals' benefit. And you can just imagine, we've seen it ourselves being fans, how often and how frequently the Royals' pitching staffs are just terrible, or at least below average. You know, even the good years are below average as a full staff. But this year, you know, they're one of the best pitching staffs in the league. And it all goes to, you know, they have their guys, and their guys are staying healthy, and their guys are performing. And they're doing so better than anybody in the American League, just about.
Yeah, you know, and speaking of doing better than just about anybody in the American League, not only are the Royals one of the hottest teams in the league in the win column, but on top of all their pitching success, I mean, we've kind of talked about it a little bit, but we're going to dive a little bit deeper into their offensive sort of resurgence. I mean, first of all, we can kind of start in the abstract, and that would be is Dale Swaim the answer, or I guess I should say the difference. I mean, this is always one of those things where you hear the adage too often in all sports, really. You know, the coach gets too much credit when things are going well, or gets all the credit when things are going well, gets all the blame when things are going bad, things like that. I mean, it's, you know, so how much of it is actually Dale Swaim, and how much of it is just, as Mike said earlier in the show, just kind of a fallback from a, you know, regression goes both ways. And so we knew that as bad as the Royals were going to be, they were going to bounce back at some point. They just had to, because that's just the way things work. So is Dale Swaim really that much of a difference? I don't know, but just to pull a few things here, we'll start with maybe the biggest resurgence, and that is Billy Butler, who his batting average right now is only at .267, which is well below his career average, of which going into the season was .299, and his OPS plus is only 90. So, I mean, that's not very good. Wait, no, that's not. That's a different. That's SOPS plus. Mistaken. So, regardless, his OPS is .669 on the season, which is, again, well below what we've come to expect from Billy Butler. But then you go and you dig a little deeper, you look into it. The last 7 days, okay, the last week, which consists of, it's only five games, you know, small sample size and all that, but Butler's hitting .444 with a .522 on base and a .722 slugging. I mean, for whatever you expect of Billy Butler, that is above and beyond what anybody would expect from him, obviously. And it's not possible to keep that going, but that's just showing you how hot he's been over the last week. And then you drop that over the last 2 weeks, and you're moving up to 11 games, and he's still hitting .350, .413, .550 for a .963 OPS. And then if you go even further and you go back to the last month, so since about mid-May, after an awful month and a half to start the season, he's hitting .294, .340, .400 for a .740 OPS. And in that time, he's got, you know, three home runs, .432, and 32 RBIs. So Billy Butler has turned things around about as well as and any, you know, especially over the last month, that .294, .340, .400 stat line, that's about what you'd expect. If that's what Billy Butler did, you know, ends up at for the season, which he'll probably be a little bit lower than that just because he had such so far to climb. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if that's where he ended up, you'd say, okay, just another Billy Butler season, you know, hits in the .290s, low .300s, gives you a .700+ OPS, good on base, 15 to 20 home runs. I mean, people like to rag on Butler and talk about how, you know, oh, he needs to produce like a DH or whatever, but that's an incredibly valuable stat line to do that year in and year out, which he's done. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know. I can't remember the exact date of when Swaim took over, but
it was right at the end of May.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's Butler started the uptick a little bit before Swaim took over, but he's been really hot ever since he has. So again, I don't know if that's the difference, but moving on to Alex Gordon, I mean, Gordon is, like Mike said earlier, I mean, MVP level candidate or MVP candidate level player at this point. I mean, for the season, he's at 286, 369 on base, 447 slugging. I mean, this is looking closer to the 2011 Gordon than it is the 2012 or 2013. And that 2011 Gordon, I mean, Gordon made the All-Star game last year, but the 2011 Gordon
he should was have the been one the All-Star. Should have. Yeah.
So,
yeah, instead of Aaron Crow.
Yeah. Good God. Okay. Anyway. So Gordon has actually, you know, over the last five games, actually not done as well. 273, 304, 364. But over the last 2 weeks, 316, 435, 526 over the last 2 weeks. And then over the last month, he's been hitting 318, 437, 541 for a 978 OPS and five home runs in that stretch. So Gordon also over the last month has turned it up quite a bit. And I mean, he's playing at an incredible level. And then you look at Mike Moustakas, will be the final one that we'll really kind of dig into. And his season stats are still just abysmal. At 174, 246 on base, 349 slugging for a 595 OPS. If you're not breaking 600 OPS, you do not deserve to be in the major leagues. But we've discussed that ad nauseum. Let's talk about the here and now. And the here and now is over the last five games of the last week, he's hit 353, 450, 588. Right, for over 1,000 OPS. It's only, again, it's only five games, but that's probably about as good a five-game stretch as Mike Moustakas has had in the last 2.5 years. And then you've got over the last 2 weeks, he's hit 250, 341, 444. And that right there, at this point in his career, knowing what we know about Mike Moustakas, that is what you want. If Mike Moustakas can give this Royals team the 250, 341, 444 line, or something close to it, consistently year in, year out, he is going to be a very, very valuable major league player, specifically with his defense. And then if you extend it out and go over the last month, you know, when he came back up from the minors, he still kind of struggled. And really, you're only adding a few games on over the last 2 weeks because he did have a little bit of his stint in the minors in there. But he's hitting 234, 308, 426. So still, you know, an OPS of 733, even though the batting average is 234. And, you know, you'd still even take that, especially compared to what he's given you the last couple of years. But, I mean, so then what you're seeing, though, is going from the month to the 2 weeks to the week. I mean, you're seeing maybe an upward trend of Mike Moustakas. And the question is, these three players are just the kind of the biggest examples of the turnaround that the Royals have had offensively. And one of the interesting points when you really look at it is if you paid attention to the statistical line that we gave, the slash line, as we call it, of the batting average, on base, and slugging for all three of those players, and we'll just run it through real quick. Mike Moustakas at 174, 246, 349. Alex Gordon at 286, 369, 447. And Billy Butler at 267, 321, 348. I mean, those numbers are all sustainable from a season standpoint, if nothing else, if not improved upon. Specifically, good Lord, I'm sorry I have to interrupt.
Lorenzo Cain play?
Yeah, he just made an unbelievable catch to rob a home run that was about as good as I've seen. And you know,
well, here's the thing. Noriyoki on that Hosmer play slid in and looked like some kind of groin pull or something, because Kane didn't start the game. Aoki was there. Oh, he doesn't catch that ball.
Yeah, well, Kane, I thought Kane started. He just didn't start in center.
Or, I mean, no, he was getting the day off just to give him a break.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's one of those okay, weird kind of deals. Anyway,
Kane just made a hell of a play. Yeah. So talking sustainability, sorry, I lost. That was such an amazing catch. I done lost my train of thought.
This is what happens when the Royals are on a roll.
I know, right?
Okay.
It's tough. But point being that overall, like if you look at what all the Royals are doing right now, everything is completely sustainable. So from a season standpoint.
Right.
And so then Now, the question is, they're obviously not going to go on. They're not going to not lose another game. And they can't continue hitting like they have over the last few weeks. But the point is, kind of like what we talked about before, earlier in this, not this particular show, but just on previous shows, where we said, you know, regression, like I said just earlier, it goes both ways. They were going to bounce back. They were going to come back. And the Royals have been saying that. And there were areas where we were skeptical that we didn't see it coming back a lot, you know, specifically the Moustakas of the world and even a little bit of the Hosmers, because he's just having issues with his swing. And he was one of the people that I didn't go over, but he's actually gotten worse over the last month or so. But anyway, you know, we knew there was going to be some bounce back from Billy Butler, you know, from some different players that was going to allow the Royals to have a little bit more success. And the ultimate point here is that while we all knew the Royals weren't as bad as the first couple weeks or the first couple, you know, month and a half or so of the season, and they've shown that now. But we also know that the Royals aren't as good as these last couple weeks have been. But where the Royals will kind of balance out is if you were to take, okay, the first month and a half of the season and the last month, you know, offensively, or the last 2 weeks, and put them on opposite ends of the spectrum, the Royals aren't going to line up in the middle. They're probably actually going to line up a little bit closer to the way they've been playing the last couple weeks, but not nearly as good all the same. So what I'm trying to get at is that this play that the Royals are having, while maybe not sustainable at the top end, is, you know, 80% sustainable. So if the Royals go in there, they've won 8 straight at this point. Well, you know, maybe they win 5 out of 3 once they kind of settle back down and regress back to what their normal levels should be.
Wait, so 5 out of 3?
I'm sorry, 5 out of 8, 5 and 3.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry. 5 out of 3 would be amazing. But 5 and 3 is what I was thinking in my head.
That's what, yes, I thought you meant. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, 5 out of 8. But, you know, still, you're winning 5 out of 8 games. You're on pace for one hell of a good season. So, I mean, that's 100 wins.
I think 4 out of 7 gets you to about 90.
Yeah, so 5 out of 8 gets you to 100, because if you... because you just basically multiply that by 20. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic, even when looking at regression for how the Royals have been hitting the last couple weeks. And it's, you don't, I mean, even the last couple weeks, like, unless you accept for, you know, Billy Butler, his last week or so, where he's just been out of his mind. Like, you still look at stuff and you still don't think any of it's really all that unsustainable. You know, like the last 2 weeks for Mike Moustakas is sustainable. The last couple weeks for Alex Gordon is sustainable. You know, Billy Butler, again, a little bit over his skis a little bit. But, you know, Lorenzo Cain has been regressing. Eric Hosmer has been regressing. So, I mean, it's just kind of been better timely hits and more power from when they are hitting. So, yeah. I mean, What are your thoughts, Mike? Do you think Swaim is the answer? Is he the reason? And do you think, if he is the reason, I mean, does that lead us to believe that maybe this is a lot more sustainable than we thought?
I don't know if he's the reason completely, but I think you know, going from where they started, and you know, at the point where he took over, May 29th was the date. He just wasn't, nobody was hitting all that great. You know, overall, the offense wasn't really scoring runs since they have. Now, I think a lot of that is just a correction. I think it's just regression from, you know, guys like Butler, who you knew weren't going to hit, you know, 220 all year. You know, he's just so talented of a hitter, just wasn't going to happen that way. You know, Gordon was kind of having some struggles there too, up until, you know, a month ago where he started to get hot again. And, you know, you kind of felt like from his track record, he was going to at least be able to be average. Whereas before, you know, he wasn't average, at that point a month ago when things kind of turned. Sal Perez had a bad skid. Moustakas, even being terrible and with the terrible numbers, still had to get better. It's like I said before, rock bottom. There's only one way to go but up. And so that's, you know, right there, that's 4 or 5 parts of your lineup And they all started to kind of go on the upswing at the same time, whereas guys like Kane and Escobar, who started out really hot, really didn't fall off that much. Kane, here and there, you know, Escobar has been pretty consistent. And so with those guys staying steady and the others improving, you get this balance where there's not a lot of holes in the lineup. There's not really, there's still, I said this, I think, 3 weeks ago, there's not one guy that you're really afraid of in this lineup. I think Alex Gordon's probably as close to that as you get, especially right now. But I still don't think it's not on the level of Mike Stanton or Giancarlo Stanton. Sorry, Giancarlo Stanton, if he ends up in Kansas City somehow.
Or if he's listening to this podcast, yeah.
Sure, yeah, maybe he is, I don't know. There's nothing to do in Miami, you know, so.
Yeah, you know. The nightlife there sucks, we all know that much.
Yeah. So, I mean, you get all these guys who start to improve and kind of reach to their talent level and to what, you know, their normal production level should be, all close to the same time, and even with Hosmer kind of falling off, you know, in the last week and a half, he's really hit a lot better. So that's kind of what's going on here, where it's this regression, and there was a really good post on ESPN's Sweet Spot blog. They do a lot of statistical things, but it's relatively accessible. But they were talking about, you know, these are the Royals, this is who they are, and that, you know, nobody's really severely underperforming. Maybe Moustakas and Infante's been kind of struggling a bit, but if you look at them from a statistical standpoint, those guys, there's nobody who's playing out of their minds that they're going to completely fall off the cliff and take a nosedive towards, you know, a big slump to correct, you know, the hot streak. You know, that's kind of what it works out to, is okay, maybe they'll have a hot streak, but over a long term, they're going to regress towards what their normal projection is usually going to be. And that's what this article is talking about, where, you know, they're comparing what a couple of different projection systems put out for what they expected for, you know, every player in the lineup, and compared their current numbers to those, and they're very close. They're very close to the projections, which if you put it in one term, you can say, well, this is who the Royals are, and they're not going to get much better than what they're doing overall. And I think a lot of people could bristle at that and be like, okay, well, you don't think they're going to get better. But the thing about it is they're pretty consistent with the projections. So what they're able to do, they're probably going to stay around that level. I mean, there's going to be swings. There's always the curve where, you know, you're hot for a little bit, and then you kind of slump a bit to come back down, and then, you know, you slump for a little bit, but then you come back up. It's always kind of like this wave of a sort. But it's always kind of moving towards that center line. And the longer you go in the season, the more it bends towards that center line, which is kind of what your expectations are. So, like, for example, the projections on Billy Butler by one system was a .273 average, .334 on base, and .386 slug. Well, the time that it was written, he was hitting .263, .316, and .342. So he's pretty close to that, with some room to kind of swing up to that. And you want to see that improvement. But at the same time, he's probably not going to do a whole lot more than that. Gordon is like right around where his projections are. So you can kind of expect him to stay at the level that he's been over the course of the year. And so, you know, I think a lot of, you know, with the Dale Swaim question, has been that he probably benefits a bit from that regression back towards the mean of what their expected production should be. And right now, everybody's overall doing that. It's happening to look right now where everybody's hot at the same time. And that's great. I mean, the benefits are you get an 8-game winning streak on the way to a 9-game winning streak. But I think over the course of the year, it's going to, you know, there's going to be some fluctuation with each player, but I think generally they're going to be around where their projections are, which is, you know, a fairly average offensive team, maybe a tick below average because the on-base skills aren't emphasized as they are in Houston or Oakland. But over the course of the year, I think they're going to be better than they were in May. They're not going to be as good as they have been in the last week and a half. And whether that's Swaim or not, It's either Swaim or it's Math or it's a little bit of both. And I'm willing to give Swaim some credit with the power department, because one of the things he came in saying was that he wanted to have them hunt out that pitch, you know, that upper part, you know, waist high kind of thing that a lot of guys have passed on. And I haven't noticed them passing on that pitch as much. And you see them driving the ball and everybody's hitting for a lot more power. So I think maybe some of that is to his credit as far as like an approach. But I think most of it is just the stats evening themselves out. And it kind of looks like it's his doing because of the timing. But maybe he's a witch. I don't know. I mean, it's very possible. The weird things happen. Maybe there's angels out there.
That could very well be the case. I mean,
Gordon have it on the phone.
Yes. Whatever he's doing, or any of them, or any of whatever all of them are doing, we just need to keep doing it. Now, I don't know how much else there is to say. I mean, it's one of those things where, and we actually were talking about it earlier via our email chain, and my kind of hypothesis, more or less, is that I think the change was made kind of more for the sake of making a change, really, than anything that was all that necessary. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the reason you make a change for the sake of making a change is because it does kind of jumpstart people sometimes. And I think that may be what it did, you know, just kind of energize people. Because when you...
It was similar last year, too, where, you know, it was like a wake-up call. Right after they made the change at hitting coach last year, they went on a good tear, too, and kind of worked their way back. And you see it a lot when teams change managers. There's usually about a 5-6, you know, sometimes even 10-game bump where they play a lot better because, you know, there is a change and they have to kind of, you know, it's a different energy. It's a different, you know, different voice. And you know, it wakes them up a little bit. So maybe that's at play, too.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things where it's human nature never to – you don't want to – be at fault, and you don't want to admit blame. And it's hard sometimes, especially as a pro athlete, where having a bit of an ego and having a bit of swagger to it is kind of par for the course. You need that to get to that highest level to a certain extent. You know, obviously some players may take it too far, but when you do need a little bit of that to succeed. And I think the flip side of that is when you're in a situation where you've got an extended period of a lack of success, you dig in your heels a little bit. I think it's just human nature at that point. You don't want to admit you're wrong. You can't believe that it's truly, you know, something going wrong or whatever. But when that change happens, even if it's something that nobody was really doing wrong, well, maybe it gives the players a chance to examine themselves and take a step back and say, okay, we got somebody new in here. He's telling me some slightly different things. Maybe it is time to take a fresh approach and look at new things. And sometimes it takes a little outside momentum to spur those inward looking critiques and finding a way to make things, you know, to change things for the better in those cases. So that could be what it is as well, beyond just the simple, you know, oh well, he's letting him swing at pitches higher in the zone now. Well, with that, I think we're going to wrap up the show. It's a little bit faster
than maybe people are used to.
A shorter show than we haven't, because the Royals have been good. We've been kind of paying a lot of attention to these Royals here. So yeah,
I got caught. Yeah. I was watching the Kane replay there for a second. It was an awesome play.
Yeah. So hopefully, they'll, I think we'll end the show on that note, and hopefully if the Royals can hang on, they're up 8-2 now in the top of the fifth inning as we record this. So hopefully if they hang on and win this game and then keep kind of rolling with it, then next week Mike and I can talk in earnest about a playoff push and possibly who...
What to do, get some help in here.
Maybe.
And that's the other thing that, you know, this article on ESPN that was talking about, okay, well, these are the guys, this is who they are, and this is about as good as you should expect them to be. The thing that's not in there is that what if they go out and get somebody who is better? You know, what if they go and trade for somebody who can, you know, hit the ball out of the park, you know, 20 times for him over the course of 3 months or something. You know, that changes things, and that changes the offense and changes what the, you know, the overall projection could be. And, you know, the Royals are kind of in a position where, well, I mean, let's not get ahead of ourselves, but 2 weeks from now, I mean, maybe they're in a spot where they want to go get that guy to put in right field over Aoki and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, especially if Aoki's left this game as we're recording, you know, if he has a groin issue that puts him out for a couple weeks,
yeah,
and the Royals come out of this, maybe they rip off 3 out of 4 from the Tigers and they're a game up as they leave, you know, I guess it would be a half game.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they, you know, continue this tear, and maybe they're 3 games up 2 weeks from now, and Aoki's not going to be back for another couple weeks, and who knows how well he's going to be when he comes back. Maybe it's one of those scenarios where you say, hey, let's go out and get somebody.
Yeah.
And the Royals make this push, and as I was saying, you know, I mean, if the Royals continue this and they're in a position that we can, you know, maybe we can, I think what the strangest thing is it feels like if the Royals were to take hold of this division, like really take a stranglehold, you know, like a month from now, have maybe, you know, a 5-10 game lead somewhere in that area. Like, I mean, that's, I don't think that'll happen. But if we get to that point, it feels kind of weird because it feels like there's nothing to talk about. Cause you say like, well,
yeah, I don't know.
This is what we're working for. But then we can start looking, like I said, in earnest about a playoff push. And not only that, but who might the Royals play? I mean, again, don't want to get way ahead of ourselves, but the point being, we're just kind of how much of an uncharted territory this truly is, to where, I mean, we really would kind of just stand around if the Royals had a commanding lead over, you know, 2 months from now, if the Royals had a commanding lead over this division, just, well, what do we do?
Yeah. You know? I don't know. When I was with FanSided, I was talking on a Yankees podcast for the Yankees site on that network. And, you know, one of the things that I asked the guy, I was like, what's it like to, you know, have it to enter every year thinking, okay, we can make the playoffs or we should make the playoffs. What's that like? And he's like, you know, man, once you get to August, every game is like the worst day of your life and the best day of your life at the same time. It's like, okay, cool. I want that. You know, you remember last year when like that Carlos Peña game where he, you know, struck out looking. That was an intense game. And, you know, as nerve-wracking as it is, when it happens and it goes your way, that's a lot of fun.
We're going to end the show on that note. And like I said, the Royals are winning as we end this recording. So hopefully they'll pull this off and they'll be in first place. And then hopefully they can keep it going for another week. And they'll have an even more bigger lead when we record next week. So for
runaway and hide, like you said.
Yes, that would be fantastic if they could do that. So for Michael Engel, I am Jeff Herr, and this has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. And another shout out, thank you to our new sponsor, Baseball Reference Play Index. Again, if you want to look into some stats and find some stuff, find something interesting, use the Play Index, use the promo code Royals to get $6 off your subscription, and then send it to us. We'll bring it on air, we'll give you credit, and Mike will send you a copy of Willie Akin's book, Safe at Home. So thanks for listening. We'll hope you tune in next week. And absolutely, now more than ever, as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.